The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
And welcome to the Disciplined Investor Podcast. This is your host, Andrew Horowitz. We are all the way up to episode number 71, which just to kind of give you a little perspective there, I guess that means we've been doing this over a year and a year and a quarter now. And we hit number one on the iTunes charts a couple of weeks back. And we were there for over a week and a half. We're top 10 still. And thank you so much for your support. If you're a first-time listener, well, we talk about money here. We talk about investments. We talk about markets. We talk about the economy. We talk about my rants, my craziness. We just really bring it home, trying to make you money and doing our best to figure out how to not only educate you and understand things that help you understand things that are going on in these markets, but also to stay out of some trouble. And we've done a good job, I think. Have we, gang? I think we've done a good job, right? We've done a good job at you have. I have. We've all done it together. I see it from your emails And I know that from the commentary on the website, which I'd love to boost up if I can. That's a goal of mine, to kind of bring up the community value and the community comments on the website, the Disciplined Investor. That would be just awesome. But nonetheless, I think we've done a really good job, all of us together, at really protecting ourselves in this down market. And today what I've done is I have a couple things I want to share with you. We're going to go right into the topic with Mish Mike Shedlock, who is a great, a really good economist and investment advisor, a gentleman who really studies the financials in particular and the financial markets and the economics behind it all. Not only that, the political environment as well. But I want to bring that to you, and I want to talk to you about things such as, you know, where do we go from here? And I want to also play some audio clips for you. Particularly, there was one that Jim Cramer did last week, and he did talk about, you know, I think he really articulated something very important. Oftentimes, I think that he is, he goes on individual stock rants and discussions about very, very macro and very selective issues. But the rant that he did last year, if you recall, that crazy rant where he was screaming out that they just don't understand, I think this, although this is in a calm fashion, he did it in a nice way, and I think a much more understandable about Fannie and Freddie. And I'm going to play that for you in just a moment. And then we'll get into a discussion, because I want to ask Mike about, where do we go from here with Fannie and Freddie, with Lehman? I put up a couple of posts on the website about Lehman. If you don't go there and you utilize this as your only source of information, I would encourage you to check out thedisciplinedinvestor.com. I have links there to my MSN Money post that I do over at Top Stocks, the weekend earnings report that I put up there, the projection. I project out what's happening the next week and what to look for in terms of earnings and trades, and that's on Top Stocks over at MSN Money. And also, of course, my strategy lab portfolio, oh boy, it is just sitting there about a little less than even, I think down 1%, and that's because I've been on the short side of things. Matter of fact, I was positive until all of a sudden this week, oil seemed to stage a huge turnaround, didn't it? And a lot of people were talking about how oil was all of a sudden coming back and it was bouncing off the bottoms, and there was a ridiculous conversation about how oil was now, it was of course all of a sudden a supply issue all over again, which is a bunch of hogwash on our client site. You know, the Disciplined Investor Managed Growth Strategy, where you can invest a portion of your, some money with us directly. If you haven't done that, check that out on the website. Just go there and you can see a virtual tour. It's 14 minutes long, and it tells you all about that. But on that private blog site, we have a private website for clients there. What we do is we post information about trades and things and that. And on Thursday, I wrote that it was ridiculous that what was happening with oil, you know, this incredible increase in one day was absolutely hogwash. Speaking about hogs, it was also the commodity markets that were doing some things that were ridiculous. And it was, in fact, I think we hit two records last week. We hit one that was the record of oil on the upside and commodities and the upside in general. And then we saw the record downstroke. Since 1994, I think it was, we never saw oil down so much as it was on Friday. We actually added oil, additional shorts to the portfolio on the Oil and Gas Index, which is the ETF through DUG, Doug, and it popped up, I think, about a buck and a half since we added that to the portfolio. For those that didn't have it, and added some additional to those that were under allocated to it. So that was very good. But I think that we're going to continue to seeing this. Matter of fact, on Friday, we saw Bernanke talk about how commodities were in his crosshairs now as they needed the dollar to strengthen and commodities to start to really moderate. The pricing could not stay where it was due to inflationary problems, as well as the fact that it would obviously create and continue to create worldwide problems. But we'll get into that in a moment. We'll talk about that with Mish on this episode. And listen to this. This is what Cramer had to say on the issue recently. I think it was on Thursday, regarding Fannie and Freddie and the entire the rigged market. And then when we get back, we'll talk to Mish Shedlock on the Disciplined Investor Podcast. We'll be right back.
Good to be with you. You know, there have been lots of proposals about ways that Fannie and Freddie could maybe get worked out here. Right. One of them, Greenspan says, nationalize the companies, then sort of rehatch them into the public market one way or another. But one thing that you have been talking about, at least today, I haven't heard anyone else say, and it's very novel, and that would be to...
Stop trading these two stocks. This is an outrage. Hundreds, 200 million shares of each were trading today. It's very clear that someone knows what's happening. Now, one of the things that we're supposed to have, you know, we had this organization called the SEC. It was really fabulous. And I have to be facetious because it's just too unbelievable. The New York Stock Exchange, another organization, the companies themselves, they used to stop trading when it was clear that there were some people who knew what was going on and others don't. I don't know what I would do if I were an individual and I own one of these stocks. I would just say, you know what? I'm not going to invest in stocks anymore. And there's no cop on the beat anymore. There isn't anyone who just says, wait a second, this is outrageous. Hundreds of millions are trading. This percentage drops every day. You've got some guy on NPR who's the CEO, and he's saying we don't need capital. There is so much confusion. There's so much money changing hands. It's just so unfair to the little guy. I can't believe it, Tyler. Can't believe it.
Who knows what, do you think, here? People at the Treasury?
Short sellers know. I mean, remember the SEC was grateful enough to allow manipulation again. They welcomed it back. They had a two-week ban or whatever, and they come back and say, listen, manipulators, hey, you're in charge. Maybe we'll come up with some short selling rules. Again, being a little facetious because I'm so outraged, Tyler. I believe that that there are people who are selling this aren't just making conjecture. Now, Barron's had an article this weekend. They claim they had a Treasury source. That person should be outed. We spend billions in this country trying to find out a Valerie Plame and whether who leaked that. Well, here's a leak that cost the Treasury maybe $500 million. Maybe we may end up paying $500 billion because of this leak. But our president, totally disengaged. Our Treasury Secretary has been saying over and over again, things are fine, no different here. We have many people speaking to the media from the Treasury. This is just one of the most outrageous things I've ever seen. Again, I come back to our viewers have to be saying, you know what? I don't need this. I'm going to go into Treasuries. It's too crooked. It's too rigged.
Just to play devil's advocate here, don't you think that the viewers, the informed investors, know that there's something going on here, that something's going to happen here, and that they've been forewarned not to touch this stuff?
Again, in the old days, what would happen is a company would never come forward and say, listen, the CEO would say, we don't need capital. And yet there'd be plans being made by the most important character in the game to give them capital. This is so disingenuous. There's so much dissembling here. And I just think everyone's going to get away with it. We've got a total laissez-faire administration. It's radical. They're literally undoing years and years of trust that the exchanges have established. Years and years of trust are going right out the window. I wish they knew all the damage they're doing to corporate capitalism.
How would you answer the people who say, let the market just play this out?
It's never been like that. I mean, you know what? We'll go back to 1929 then. Let's just have a free fire zone for everybody other than the ultra rich. Let's drive everybody out and make this into the club that is Piping Rock and the club that is Bottle Sprawl, the club that is just a bunch of rich people sitting around and saying, look at those chumps. I know what Paulson's saying. This is an outrageous moment, and I am just aghast that the SEC, the New York Stock Exchange, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, anybody in charge, Justice Department, come on.
Step in, you say.
Yeah.
Can this end well?
Well, it depends. I mean, you know, if they give the taxpayer, then we'll get the upside when it's over. But it certainly isn't going to. Where are all those bulls used to come on and say, Fannie, the earnings per share, that in 2010, they got a lot of earnings per share. It can't end well, but it won't end well. What I'm talking about is for the individual shareholder who basically just says, oh, I see. Big joke. Okay, I wasn't in on it. It was the punchline I didn't get. Well, that's too bad. You know what? I know why the market's rigged. I'm not going ever back to it. And that's what's going to happen.
Once again, the cynical, they would get cynical as a result of that.
They have to. Yeah. I don't blame them. I go into munis. Government obligations too. GEOs. I would not worry about AAA. It doesn't work.
Jim Cramer, thank you very much. Always.
Well, that was something.
The debate going.
One of my good friends, Mish Shedlock, is here. He is really one of the brightest guys that I know in terms of what's going on these days in the economy and with the financials, and has a real good a pulse on things. And I'm always very impressed to read his work. And just as a quick idea for you, if you haven't done so, make sure to just type in Google Mish, and you will find his website, and it is an absolute treasure of information on the financials and the markets and all things that you need to know. So, Mish, how are you?
I'm fine. Pleasure to be back here on the show.
Thanks. Listen, you know, we've talked back and forth on a lot of this, and obviously many of the things that you've said have absolutely come to fruition. And lately, the biggest topic. Well, I don't know if I could talk about the biggest topic because there's so many biggest topics, right? I mean, but, you know, Lehman is just a disaster area, to say the least.
Lehman is a huge disaster. They've got multiple problems. They need to raise capital. They're not in a position to be able to raise capital. And just 5 days ago, the CEO of Lehman, Richard Fuld, came out and said that he was not going to sell their Neuberg Bergman unit. That's their big moneymaker right now. But guess what? It's on the block anyway.
Yep.
Lehman is not in a position to dictate what it sells or how it sells or even what it gets. Lehman is in a position that it needs to raise capital. All options at this point have to be on the table. And it's kind of interesting. We've seen a yes, no with Korea and with various private equity, right, in terms of what pieces of Lehman that they might buy. It's right now, it's out of Lehman's control. This is Friday. It'll be interesting to see if we see some action on Monday or Tuesday of next week.
You know, I wrote a piece this week on MSN's Top Stocks, and it was about, I entitled it, you know, Lehman's PR. Lehman's PR machine or PR engine is broken. The CEO has this unbelievable, uncanny way of either doing one of two things, either sticking his foot in his mouth and saying something when only a few days later it changes dramatically, or lying through his teeth. I think there's somewhere in between there, a combination. But what really troubles me, and it really is causing me a lot of concern here, particularly with Lehman, and then it really spreads out to the rest of the entire block of brokerages, is that, you know, way back when there was a letter sent out and he talked about how there was no need for capital infusions, and all of a sudden, miraculously, days later, there was a preferred offering for, I think it was $4 billion. And this has gone on continually, this game they're playing with lying and outright saying things that aren't true. And it's the same thing here where they come out and they say, you know what, we're fine, we're one of the strongest in the industry, or at least we have no problems, or whatever they said this time. And this Neuberger-Berman thing pops up, and all of a sudden we have the Bank of Korea. I mean, it's what's the story? I mean, how are they allowed to do this?
The story is, I agree with you, that they're not being upfront. But actually worse than Lehman is Merrill Lynch, who countless times over the past year has said this is the last capital raising effort we're going to need to do, only to 3 or 4 days later go out and have to raise capital. Citigroup has done the same thing. So the only ones that have actually stuck to their story, and it's because the story is so hopeless that they cannot raise capital, is someone like Washington Mutual. The CEO says, we have no plans to raise capital. I translated that in, we're unable to raise capital. Washington Mutual very much needs to raise capital.
Well, but here's the problem. This is what I always thought. I said, you know, once here, once there, three times, you raise some capital, eventually, I mean, you would think, eventually, somebody's going to come out and say, you know what, you can't have any more money. You have blown it. You have destroyed and incinerated our money that we gave you. And how dare you come again and try to ask us for money? I mean, that's what's happening now, right? The whole thing is rotating.
Absolutely. Yep. The bond market at some point is going to choke on all of this, and it's going to choke on GM trying to raise more capital and Fannie and Freddie trying to raise. Look at Freddie Mac. Freddie Mac said in no uncertain terms, three times over the last month, that it was going to raise $5 billion in capital. Its entire market cap now is something like $2 billion. How is the company that's worth $2 billion going to raise $5 billion in capital?
Well, let me show you.
Not going to happen other than a taxpayer bailout coming from the Treasury.
Well, let me explain to you. Ready? This is Andrew Horowitz, and I just want to let you know, everybody, I'm raising $5 billion in capital this week. How do you like that? Good? Does it work?
I'm Mish. I'm raising $10 million in capital. Yes, that is exactly what they're doing.
Unbelievable. Listen, I want to play something for you. It's a recent commentary by Dick Bovay, I believe his name is, from Lather Them Thalman, whatever. This is the guy who clearly is the captain that is absolutely, in my opinion, willing to go down with the ship, as he has been the financial analyst. Cheerleader, clearly, or as they in the hood, they'll call it the bitch. But he's the cheerleader. I hope I can say that. He's the cheerleader of the financials. And listen what he had to say regarding this is after, by the way, let me just set this up. This is after he has upgraded Lehman and after he gave some kind of cock and bull discussion about 3 days is the max amount of time they have to do something. So he upgrades it first. He says it's going to be okay. Then he talks about there's going to be some kind of a buyout with the Korean bank. And then he talks about 3 days. And then he says this.
I think it's going to survive because I think it will bring in enough equity to shore up the balance sheet. And I think at the same point in time, it will probably shrink about $100 billion off of its assets. So the net effect is I think the company is stable enough to go through a tougher environment even in the financial system. 6 months from now, it'll be a much smaller company, and 12 months from now, it'll be even smaller than that. Its earnings power will be significantly reduced. So even though it's going to survive, it's not going to survive as a vibrant, growing company for at least 3-4 years.
And survive, does that mean survive alone as a standalone company?
I think so. I don't think that the Federal Reserve will allow any bank in the United States, traditional bank in the United States, to buy a company which is in as much trouble as Lehman apparently is at the moment, because then the FDIC would have to pick up the problem.
So what do you think about that? I mean, he says there's going to be $100 billion of reduction in assets, and the company is going to be, what do you say, 6 months, it's going to be smaller, and how does that all tie out?
Oh, it doesn't tie up. He's got a price target of $20 a share on this thing now.
Right.
Where it's actually sitting, as of the close today, $14.41. Now, interestingly, today, it gapped up on the open. It opened at $15.80, where previously it was at $13.72. The thing quite literally sold off all day today. So, and we had upgrades. Weren't there some upgrades coming, you know, somewhere on Lehman today? What are these people smoking?
Yeah, I don't know.
That's really what you have to look at. And all of this stuff, all of the manipulation, and there's manipulation all over the place. You know, people accuse me of not seeing the manipulation, but actually most of the manipulation we see is straight out in front, in plain view of everyone. And by manipulation, I'm saying the Fed coming in on options expiration and reducing the discount rate, coming in on options expiration week, and dramatically lowering the Fed funds rate on options expiration week, coming out with upgrades and plans and bailouts in options expiration week, coming out with a targeting naked short sellers. Fannie Mae rose from something like, you know, $7 all the way up to $18. Guess where Fannie Mae is at today? Fannie Mae is at the close today, $5 roughly on the nose. So it's given back 100% of that short squeeze that was triggered on purpose by the SEC and the Fed and the Treasury. It's given it all back.
You know, last time you were on, I remember this conversation. It wasn't too long ago. We talked about that this rise was going to drop. You and I talked about this, that it was all about the option expiration. It was all about a window dressed process that was being artificially generated in order to, once again, hopefully stave off some kind of catastrophe, which eventually is going to be the nationalization of our mortgage system, so it seems.
Right now, that seems to be where it's headed. Probably right now, anyway, they're going to try and stop it one step from that. It seems like the most likely bailout that's going to happen is going to be some super senior preferred bonds, preferred stock of some kind that is going to totally wipe out the equity shareholders. And
that's why they're running. That's why they're all running for the hills right now.
Exactly. But why they didn't see this coming? The short squeeze that was initiated when the SEC halted, put in the regulations on shorting of Fannie, Freddie, and 17 other financials. I posted on my blog. I said, as soon as this short squeeze is over, there's going to be nothing but an air pocket beneath this.
Right.
And that's exactly what happened. The shorts were all driven out. The market makers, who were, of course, allowed to naked short, actually they have to. There's no other way to run a stock moving.
Right. It's just administrative. We're talking administratively, not from a trading standpoint.
Yes, yes. Just in the normal course of action, someone has to take the other sides of trades that are going on. But when they squeezed out all of the retail shorts, every one of them was squeezed out, and the stock rises close to 150% or in a matter of 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's an air pocket below. So who made money? Who made money was the people that were the broker dealers that were allowed to naked short. Actually, I think Fannie Mae is probably lower today as a result of an action that was taken by the SEC and the Fed in an attempt to raise prices.
Hmm.
It backfired and then some because of the air pocket that was below.
Well, because
there were no bids.
Right.
Shorts provide a cushion on the way down. Shorts covering their shorts provide a cushion on the way down. Well, when the market makers are the only one that's short, there's no cushion on the way down. That's what happened.
So,
total collapse in Fannie and Freddie.
What is the world like? Let's back up for a second. You know, for those that are listening, so we've beaten this pretty well, and obviously it's getting to a point. It's not our fault. I mean, you know, it's just reporting the news, if you will, and kind of giving commentary and analysis. What is an investor to do aside from investing in Fannie Mae and taking a long shot here? Because if somehow, by the way, if the Fed doesn't take them over and come up with some kind of a plan, it's just as bad to the stockholders as well, because there's no way with the leverage that's gone on Fannie and Freddie that they can really survive at this point.
Well, that's it. The point of the matter is, and you hit the nail on the head. It really doesn't matter at this point. The stock is going to do what it's going to do, regardless of any blatant manipulation that the Fed and the SEC comes up with.
Mm.
The corporation is Fannie and Freddie are insolvent. There's no question about it. Washington Mutual is. Lehman is insolvent. All of these companies, if you actually analyze what's on their books and what it would be really worth if they had to sell that on the open market, the losses coming down the pike are going to be enormous. Professor Nouriel Roubini estimated that there's going to be $2 trillion worth of write-offs in the financials, and only $500 billion of that is underway. So we have two-thirds, possibly, of the credit crunch in front of us.
Yeah.
And if you want to be optimistic, let's call it a half. So we're halfway through this.
Yeah, he, in that same conversation, I think, said that we were in the second inning of this ball game, And there was another discussion I heard this last week, which I'm not really fully understanding, to be honest with you, that by the time this is all over, a thousand banks are going to go bankrupt and disappear. And we've only seen, how many have we seen? A dozen?
We've seen seven or eight, I think. Maybe it's nine. There was another one that went tonight, today, I think.
Are there a dozen that can actually, a thousand that can really go, or is that, maybe I'm not hearing this right?
I don't believe a thousand, actually. There were 1,400 that went in the SNL crisis. But back then, every chain, every branch was considered its own bank. So that's why we had this massive number. So it's disingenuous of the FDIC when they come out and said, well, in terms of the numbers, they're going to be far smaller this time. Well, yes, that's true, because every bank, every branch was counted as a bank back then. They've all consolidated now, so there's way fewer banks now than there was during the SNL crisis. What we're going to see, actually, is a far bigger problem than we saw back then. But in terms of the sheer number, the number is going to be down just because of all the consolidations, the mergers, the mega mergers, and the mergers on top of that that we've seen over the years. So Washington Mutual or Wachovia or banks of that nature, that's far bigger than anything that we saw blow up 20 years ago. So we are going to see fewer, but there's going to be more of them than we saw last go around.
Mm-hmm.
So my personal guess is somewhere between 100 and 300, but in terms of the actual amount of damage done, far greater than we saw during the SNL crisis. I think 1,000 is high.
Yeah, there's also discussion about so many things I want to talk about here, because this week particularly has really kind of, everything's kind of come to a head, in my opinion, this week, forgetting about exactly where the markets are up or down.
Mm-hmm.
I think you and I talked about this before earlier in the day, but I had this unbelievable, I was listening to someone after the great rise of commodities on Thursday, commenting how the reason that commodities began to rise again was because the realization of China, who is offline due to the Olympics, in parentheses, because they wanted to reduce the overall pollution to make it look good, close parentheses, said that now that China is coming back online and there's a realization that China is going to be continuing and increasing their manufacturing again, that the commodities are going to be back in major demand and therefore push prices up dramatically from their low. And I said, are they kidding me? Can they say these kind of things with a straight face?
Well,
Who are these nuts?
They say these things with a straight face every day on CNBC.
What are they doing?
What's funny is they flip-flop every day. First of all, they say, well, the stock market's up because oil's down. And then they say the next day, well, the stock market's down because oil's down. Okay, which is it? Is the stock market going up or down because of the price of oil? Actually, it's neither. But if there's one, then I would suggest that that oil is probably more positively correlated with the stock market than not. And the fact that oil has been sinking now, and commodities has been sinking, that is a legitimate reduction in demand for commodities. You see it here in the United States. Gasoline prices have fell 42 consecutive days in Southern California. And I look at that and say, wow, but there's decreased demand for gasoline in the United States. First time this has happened in like 20 years or something, where we've had a sustained decrease in the demand for gasoline. And so that's what's happening. We've got Japan heading back in recession. The U.S. is in recession, regardless of what anyone says. The U.K. is heading for recession. Parts of the EU are in recession. New Zealand and Australia are both either in or on the brink of recession. All of that is a slowing demand for commodities in general, and there's no way that China is going to pick up the slack for the entire rest of the world. I'm sorry. It's not going to happen. Yeah. I'm a big believer, actually, in the commodities super cycle. I don't think that we've seen the end of of the rise in commodities. But you know what? We might have seen and no one knows on this, but we might have seen the end of the rise in commodities for the next year or two, mm-hmm. while the global economy continues to slow.
But
we are headed for a global recession, in my opinion, mm-hmm. and all the commodity bulls are seriously don't understand the potential impact of that. Everyone knows about peak oil. Everyone knows the China story. What everyone knows is useless. And when everyone has acted on that story, which is what I think has happened here with the price of commodities, hedge funds, pension funds, everyone believing in this China story has plowed in what was a one-way bet all the way up from 2001 till today. Well, guess what? There's going to be a pullback, and that pullback is going to be a lot bigger than anyone thinks.
Well, let me throw this at you. First of all, I think that much of the demand and the supply-demand issue that shot oil up was, I've talked to you about this, and I've talked to everybody about the Enron loophole and all this. It's a bunch of, it was overdone, and it was a major speculative bubble, manipulated speculative bubble. But let's just pass on that for 1 second, whether you believe it or not. But let me just ask you a different, or bring up a different point. I am seeing a point that even if we do believe in the China story, there has to be a point that China, where it has an incredible manufacturing base because of cheap labor and the vast amount of people, and it has been shown, by the way, that they're now looking at increasing their lifestyle. Minimum wage has to go up. They want a better working environment. All that yields a much higher product overall, and that's why a tremendous amount of jobs are going from China to Korea to Vietnam and other Asian areas and other places in the world. And there's an absolute point that China will no longer, even though they have this huge army of workers, is going to get to a point they cannot consume as much because it's just not possible.
Economically possible, and it's just certainly not sustainable. To China's GDP was growing at something like 12% a year for the last few years. It's now slowed to 8. You know, maybe it's, I don't know what sustainable is. Certainly higher in China than it is in the United States, and they've got a lot more catching up to do on roads, on bridges, and whatever. But they've also got an enormous pollution problem. They have enormous other infrastructure problems. They are growing too fast, and a lot of that growth was still dependent on shipping goods to the United States. Well, guess what? The demand in the United States has fallen off. The demand in Japan has fallen off. The demand in the EU has fallen off. So who are they producing these goods for? They don't have the internal demand to support the rate of growth.
Well, they can't. That's the whole point. That's the whole conundrum. They can't have the internal because what the point is of why there's such an incredible workforce and why we're shipping all of our manufacturing there is because the low-paid workforce. A low-paid workforce cannot have demand. That's the whole point.
Well, remember, though, even though it's a low-paid workforce to them, it's making $3 an hour or $2 an hour or $1 an hour even is a lot higher wage than what they were making 2 years ago. So, you know, there is this, you know, increased wealth effect, if you would, in both India and China from that. It's just not sustainable. Even though going, say, from 50 cents an hour to $2 or $3 an hour or whatever it is, that's not enough to be able to support the lifestyle from what we've seen from all the condo construction, all the housing construction, all the other infrastructure construction that's going on. It mathematically, it just does not work.
Mm-hmm.
And pollution on top of that is untenable. China is going to have to address that pollution problem, and that pollution problem means that the rate of growth in China has to slow.
Yeah.
It must slow.
Let's take 2 minutes on this one, really quickly on this other topic, and then I want to know what we should do as investors here. There's a summit going on. I think it's in Jackson Hole or out west in Utah somewhere. Yeah, it's Jackson Hole, Wyoming. Bernanke said that the recovery of the dollar and declines in commodity prices should lead inflation to moderate, and the Fed is committed to achieving medium-term price stability and will act as necessary to obtain that objective. Let me quickly, just for 1 second, what that says in a nutshell is that the Fed is committed to keeping commodity prices down and the dollar up. In any, you want to put the dollar up and commodity prices down or whatever you want to look at it, but that is their way of saying they're fighting inflation, because obviously commodity prices rising is inflationary. So is this going to be, you think, their kind of marching orders moving forward?
Actually, I need to correct that. I don't think rising commodity prices are inflationary. They might be a result of inflation. To me, inflation is an expansion of money supply and credit. And one of the things we're seeing here with the slowing global economy is an out-and-out collapse in credit, in the ability of banks to be able to lend. I think banks are actually calling loans that they've extended to hedge funds. Hedge funds have been over-leveraged in commodities, and that is part of that speculative demand that's coming out of commodities right now, including gold, is one of the factors behind actually the collapse in commodities, and equally perhaps as much as just the fall off in demand from the industrial world. We don't know how big that commodity speculation played in it. I think it's more significant than most believe, but I don't think it's as significant as been reported. Mm-hmm. I know I've seen reports as that two-thirds of this was related to commodity speculation. I don't buy it. You know, maybe a third or maybe 20%, a significant piece. But nonetheless, a piece, and that piece is rolling back. And at the same time, we're seeing the rollback in demand from the slowing global economy. But having said that, you know, actually, it's interesting because I saw that statement today from Bernanke, and sort of in a way he was actually saying the truth. Whether he believes what he's saying or not, yeah. I don't know. He's been harping that same story actually for 5 years. Mm-hmm. Is this the boy that cries wolf? Mm-hmm. Is where he's finally saying something that's going to happen, and no one believes him. Because I do think that we are going to see slower price inflation, if I can put the word price there in front of inflation, just as a result of, I mean, look at it already. I talked about it previously, but gasoline prices have fallen 42 consecutive days. I think the year-over-year comparisons on the CPI are going to be extremely favorable, extremely easy to beat from here on out. Now, it remains to be seen. Obviously, we don't know what the U.S. is going to do or what Israel might do in terms of attacking Iran before the election. Quite literally, one has to be prepared for almost anything here in this environment. But on the surface, for the first time, it's likely that Bernanke is right, that we are going to see price inflation come down. But it's so disingenuous, however, that it makes me want to throw up, because it is certainly not because of anything that the Fed has done or the Fed being vigilant. And that's where the lie comes mm-hmm. from Bernanke, that regardless of whether prices go up or down, Bernanke's not cutting here because right. the economy is too slow.
Yep.
So essentially, he's telling the truth while lying at the same time. That's
nice.
My take.
I love that. Remember that I call it the Milli Vanilli government. They open their mouth and not the correct thing doesn't really come out. I don't want to open up another can of worms, but something's been bothering me lately. Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley. It seems to me that they lost a lot of money, like everybody else, on the housing mishap and mortgage mishap. And I am seeing an incredible amount of conversation, you know, kind of jabber, if you will, about them making up their money on the commodities market. Goldman's still talking about a 149 oil. I mean, you know, the trouble is if these guys do have this incredible amount of commodity. I mean, I don't know if you saw this, but there was a couple of reports out recently that showed that I think Citigroup made about $650 million last year on trading commodities. Morgan Stanley supposedly has locked up the Northeast in terms of the heating oil, where it's going to be 60% higher than anywhere else in the country to have heating oil this winter. And Goldman has been spending millions and millions of dollars in lobbying. And now both of those took a piece in the Dubai Commodities Exchange, which is going to be the next frontier for oil trading. Sounds a little funky to me.
Well, this is classic herding into what, I really think this is, commodities are the place to be, sort of, in general, for the next decade, let's put it that way, but that doesn't mean for the next 2 years, and that everyone's herding into those things right now. But, and speaking of herding, look at the small investor here now. We've actually got a shortage of gold eagles. We've got various smaller forms of bullion and gold and silver that are just in extremely short supply. What does that tell me? It tells me that here we are, 7, 8, 9 years into 7 or 8 years into a commodity bull.
Mm-hmm.
The average small investor has finally caught on. Guess what?
It's late.
Potentially at the exact worst time.
Right, exactly.
I'm looking at this as if it may be a huge contrarian indicator that the small speculator is now, just now, starting to look at gold, silver, gold eagles, whatever. Potentially a bad sign. I'm not saying it's necessarily going to play out this way. We need to be honest about this. No one knows what's going to happen. No one knows whether Bush or the next president, what they're going to do in Iran. No one knows what might transpire, like we've already seen with Russia and Georgia attacking each other. We don't know the geopolitics of that, but just on the surface, right now, all other things being equal, I think it's a very bad sign that the average investor is just now gotten the message.
Mm-hmm.
Of the China story, of the commodity story, and we actually now have a shortage of gold coins and of smaller bars, gold, silver in short supply. Bad sign for the
short term. You know what? This is exactly why you and I are doing what we're doing. You know, it's not only just talking about it, but that's exactly why the average investor, without, you know, tooting on our own horns, and I'm going to speak for you for a moment, but that's why you manage money, that's why I manage money, that's why there's this kind of level of kind of under-the-radar money managers that don't have to worry about the billions of dollars and moving it left and right like a, you know, I'm not going to name one of the big, whether it's Fidelity and Vanguard or one of these other guys, you know, because these guys are out there and they can't do things in a very concentrated, quick fashion. And they're really having to play the card that's dealt them in terms of playing it by the you know, the big guns and playing the game, you know, with the suit and tie game, if you will, whereas they're going to have to invest a certain way and do a certain thing. And that's why I think the big attraction, particularly now, to your kind of money management, you know, you manage money, and anybody out there that's looking for a great money manager, Sitka Pacific, you can go, we'll have links on our website for that. And that's why there's so many new accounts, I think, being opened up with people like us, which are, I would call this kind of like under the radar money managers, which can go anywhere, do anything in terms of the markets, and really weed out the noise from the truth to give investors some great opportunity. Segueing us into quickly, what is going to happen from where are we mid? Let's call it September. Let's say, what is happening at the end of the year? I mean, we're gonna crack 10,000 on the Dow, and are we gonna see you know, a continuation of this horror show across the board, and really maybe take out some of even the players that have been holding up, and aside from the financials, I mean, but is this kind of just the start of the next move down, do you think, right now?
I think it's very likely, but again, this is a question of probabilities. Just as with gold bounced off support here off the monthly chart. But the technical damage, actually, even though it's bouncing off of support, the technical damage on the daily and the weekly charts is actually substantial. And this is one of the things where no one wants to admit it, but quite literally, nearly everyone's guessing. I mean, you and I, at least we can have this conversation, and we can say, well, we don't know what's going to happen,
right. But
that we're going to react to it. And on time, as compared to someone who's really dogmatic and says, well, the U.S. dollar is going into the gutter. Some of these people are down 30% this year because they've hard, fast, you know, bet that oil is a one-way street up and that commodities are a one-way street up and that the U.S. dollar is a one-way street down. Well, even if that's true in the long run, In the short term, it's not good to take a 10, 20, or even 30% hit, as some of these places have, and that's what we're seeing. And this is what's paramount now, among everything else, is risk management.
Mm-hmm.
We are at a junction now, where perhaps the commodities resume their bull up, perhaps they don't. And I think more than likely the equity markets go down, but we must be open to the possibility of a sustained rally higher. And as long as one is reacting, but you know, not day to day, I'm not talking about day trading here, but as long as one has a focus on risk management, that one is going to do well in this kind of environment.
Mm-hmm.
And who hasn't done well in this environment is people that have a hard-nosed, philosophic, I know this is what's going to happen, as well as the Wall Street mantra that is still out there of buy and hold, diversify in a bunch of mutual funds, buy a little bit of this and buy a little bit of that. Well, guess what happened to them? Almost all of these little bits of here and there and foreign and U.S. and domestic and financials, on average, tanked this year. So diversification is not necessarily a strategy. One needs to be hedged in this environment.
Mm-hmm.
At Sitka Pacific, we are hedged.
Right.
One of our strategies is always one-third long, always one-third short. And the remaining one-third is discretionary based on market conditions.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is the right kind of approach.
Yep.
And I think that's what people need to be looking at is, and I'm sure you're doing similar kinds
mm-hmm.
of things,
mm-hmm.
where your bets are not a one-way bet up or a one-way bet down or a one-way bet on commodities, but some kind of risk management on what we do, buying at support and resistance trend lines, taking advantage of the opportunities as they come by, and being flexible. Mm-hmm. That's what one needs to do, and I think that's what you and I are doing.
Yeah, and in closing, you know, I was at the Money Show last week, I think it was last week or the week before, and there was a presentation at the Strategy Lab, and they came to me. As a matter of fact, this is playing on the video on the MSN website and the Money Show website. There's a video that says, "Is long term investing dead?" I think it's called or something. But basically, I talked about this whole notion of buy and hold. You know that people buy GE, they never sell GE. You know, I don't think I've ever met anybody that's ever sold GE. And you know, this is kind of this. Way of investing that's been really brainwashed into all of our heads, and there's times that it's good to be a buy and hold and all, but there's times it's not. But the point is that after I gave this presentation, and there was a crowd, and I'm not kidding, I wasn't so good, I don't think I was that brilliant, but there was a crowd around me asking me all sorts of questions, you know, and it was unbelievable how people are so disgusted with the old fashioned, just absolute buy a mutual fund. And their current management is all about not looking at the envelopes when they come at the end of the month, you know, because if they don't look, they don't know how much they lost with their portfolios. And the advisors, the brokers, talking to them about, don't worry, everything will be okay. Nobody's ever lost money, keeping their money in the markets over a 20-year period, blah, 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 blah. And I think that's the big thing that we need to wake up to right now is times are different. End of story. Times are different. And when times are different, it demands a different type of investment strategy. It's simple. I mean, that's nothing that you have to learn in any CFA course or any kind of advanced investing course. It's, you know, you have to invest appropriately for the time. I don't mean the day, but I'm talking about the general time span ahead of you. And I think that's why I think more and more people, and I'm getting more and more people seemingly coming to me much more agitated than they ever were before by the the patronizing that they're being patronized by their brokers. And I think there's a sea change about to happen in the markets.
Oh, the sea change is coming. The sea change is underway. There's actually a major sea change. Actually, it all starts with attitudes. And there's a big attitude shift underway away from consumption towards savings. And baby boomers who were counting on their homes for retirement are now in a panic state, realizing that their home is no longer their retirement. They're going to have to start saving rather than spending. That's going to affect jobs. That's going to affect the stock markets. That's going to continue to affect housing. And that's going to, without a doubt, affect earnings power of corporations when consumers just are no longer rushing to go out and buy the latest gizmo, to buy the latest hot thing, mm-hmm. and even to the point where they're no longer going out to eat. So we have a secular attitude change shift underway right now. Wall Street has not seen it. You and I have seen it.
Yep,
that's the bottom line.
Well, thanks for joining me today, Mish Shedlock. You can find him over at Sitka Pacific, and of course, you can find him. It's really easy just to find him. Just in any search engine, just type in Mish, M-I-S-H. And you'll find all sorts of great information. He's a very, very active blog with a lot of people, with a lot of emotion and a lot of commentary. So I think that it would be really behoove you to check it out. And I could spend hours talking to this guy. I love this guy because I think that I think first of all, he has a great way of explaining things. And I want to thank you for really sticking to your guns and a lot of things that have gone on, and really being brave enough to kind of go the direction you have and really challenge the establishment. I think you've done a lot of good for a lot of people.
My pleasure, and I look forward to talking to you in a month.
All right, great. Thanks so much, Mish. We'll see you real soon. Well, that wraps it up for today on the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Thank you so much for joining me. We're covering a lot of territory here. What I want you to do is make sure that you check out thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And, of course, if you want to check out some of the things that we're thinking about and how we're investing in the portfolio, you can go to the MSN Strategy Lab. We have links on the website, or just type in MSN Strategy Lab. And there's about six of us that are actually running portfolios there. I think I've dropped down to fourth or fifth place out of six, which is only about 1% differential on from zero because of the extraordinary move on oil. As a matter of fact, on Friday, it was interesting. On Friday, there was a discussion that I had with somebody in the middle of the day. I was saying, gosh, every single one of my positions is exactly where I wanted to be today. And then all of a sudden, kapooey, things kind of got out of hand on Friday afternoon because all of a sudden there was a huge short covering in the markets. And even the Capital One, which we shorted, MasterCard that we shorted, which were both down, and the oil, which was up dramatically, or at least the oil short was up dramatically, everything was perfectly aligned with the short-long strategy that we had. And all of a sudden, things turned around. The market just ran forward on Friday afternoon because nobody really wanted to be holding over the weekend, I think, in a great manner. But I will tell you that it is about to be time that the traders are going to come back from their vacations, and I would venture to say that if you thought that things were a little crazy now, wait till the next few weeks when the volume starts picking up dramatically. There's a window dressing going on for the end of the year for mutual funds, etc., and there's going to be a huge change in this market. And it's going to, I think the volatility is going to pick up dramatically moving forward. But again, check that out. Take a look. That's not an exact replica of what we do in the Disciplined Investor Managed Growth Strategy, but it gives you an idea of what some of the things that are going on there. And if you have any questions, of course, write me at info@thedisciplinedinvestor.com or ask Andrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And if you haven't done so yet, go pick up a copy of my book, The Disciplined Investor, over at Amazon. It's on sale, I believe, 40% or 50% off. Or 40% off sale right now. It goes back and forth. Sometimes it's $19.95. Right now it's like $13.59 or something like that. Go over to Audible. You can get or iTunes and get the actual audio book. And I really do believe that you'll be glad that you did. It gives you all of the ways in which you can profit from using the disciplines of Quanta and Funda and Tekna in your portfolio management process. This is Andrew Horowitz. Thank you so much for joining me. We'll see you next week on the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Have a great week. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.